you ever jacked in? Have you ever wire tripped?
Strange days are upon us on the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode number 51. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Aloha from sunny New Jersey, and welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 51. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Evangelista.
I'm Jeff Rollins, another one of your hosts.
I'm Dave Costell, your net neutral host.
Okay.
All right, then. And we are a podcast about movies. We have
net neutral movies.
Yes. No.
Did you guys hear the news?
Boy. I wish you could hear this noose I'm passing.
It's just your size, Dave. We have a website. It's called
Extra Small.
It's called cutprintfilm.com. We've got reviews. We've got editorials. We've got interviews. There's an interview up on our site with Nicholas Winding Refn and his wife, Lynn Kornfixen, which is not how you pronounce her name. And check it out. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's not much we don't do over at cutprintfilm.com.
Right. We don't do Windows.
We don't know how to quilt. That's one thing we don't do.
We do know how to crochet, quilt.
As it turns out, now that I'm thinking about it, there's quite a plenty long list of things we don't do.
Yeah.
We've yet to make our own movie, but I'm writing some scripts for us.
Oh, I can't wait to read them and then throw them in the fire.
Oh, boy. This is going nowhere quick. All right.
So what's up?
Yeah, what's happening in the world of movies this week? Not much.
In the wide world of sports, is that what you're going to say?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, Focus came out this week.
Speaking of Focus, let's get to business and focus on this show.
Yeah. Tell us about Focus.
Yes. Focus is Will Smith's comeback from last year when he released After Earth.
How did that movie work out?
I think that was like 3 years ago, After Earth, but anyway.
After Earth, I think Will Smith actually was released after the Earth existed. That would have been better for his career.
Yeah.
So that's like something I would have put in the headline if I wrote the review.
That really cumbersome pull quote.
Yeah, After Earth was not good.
So how was Focus, Dave? Is Big Willie style back or not?
Yeah, I mean, he's as back as he's ever going to be.
I like Will Smith.
Is he back and better than ever?
He's back and better than ever.
I think Will Smith is he's an okay actor. I don't mind him. Yeah, I think he's good with the right material, he needs the right material to work with.
He has charisma.
Yeah, he does.
I mean?
Yeah,
he's like a good lead man, but
he doesn't have range. He's just, he has a good charisma.
He's got that movie star thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Tom Cruise. I mean, I wouldn't put him in that class. But they're the same type of actor.
Yeah,
where they can,
I'd agree.
They can carry a film just on their charisma, and that's exactly what Focus is. But I don't think Focus would be as good of a movie without Margot Robbie in it.
I've heard she's very good in the film.
She is, pretty much because her character is just a ditz. Like on the page, she's as flat of a female character as you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
But she, through her performance, brings life to this character by just making it more interesting.
Right.
That's exactly what she did in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, she was great.
Because that is a role that could have just gone completely unnoticed, but she's very good. She brings some compassion to that character.
I didn't really think about that, but you're right.
That's a role that could have been annoying, and she plays it in a really... It's a smart way of playing a dumb character.
Mm-hmm. And you get that same thing in Focus. You're like, wow, if this was someone else, I would be thoroughly annoyed right now. But she's charming, and she has that same, I want to say, the same kind of charisma that Will Smith has. She makes you engage with the movie more.
So without spoiling Focus, how is the story? How's that all work out for us?
Well, there's a shootout at the end, like the end of Heat, and they all die.
Hmm. That doesn't sound right.
No.
I don't think that's true.
You accidentally spoiled the entire film.
I would say the story of Focus is the least compelling part of it because the cons are fun and there's like a...
How are the pros?
We already went over the pros. Okay. That was Will Smith. There's like an ancillary con in the middle of the film that kind of is the most fun part of the movie, but the two bookend cons are not nearly as interesting, and the later one, the big one, is very convoluted and like you're not interested in it at all. And when the twist comes, you just don't really care because
is that going to tie in later when we talk about Strange Days?
The that's true. But the twist at the end is so not big enough to match the personalities of the actors that it feels like a bit of a letdown. Yeah. And you're kind of like, oh wow, none of these characters evolved at all throughout. They're the same people they were when this movie started.
I am so tired of the long con type story being told over 2.5 hours.
Right.
Yeah,
I think the last time I enjoyed any type of con man story is an episode of Lost involving the character Sawyer.
Yeah.
and not since, what was that, like 2006 or so.
Are you sure it wasn't a Kate episode that you were thinking of?
Oh, I'm 100% sure.
Was it the one where her father's a horse? Is that
is it the one where it turns out John Locke is his father or something? I don't know.
I think the last con movie, I liked American Hustle. That's a con movie. Catch Me If You Can. I thought that was a good con
movie. I love
movie.
Catch Me If You Can.
But that's like, I was trying to, like,
American Hustle is almost like an anti-con movie.
Yeah, but it's got a big con in it. I mean, you know.
The last con movie I liked was Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan.
Ugh.
I both hate and love what you just said.
I was about to make a James Con joke, but I have no need now that you did that.
Beat you to it.
Can we just wipe the slate clean and plow through?
Right.
But in the same way that the focus, the con at the end of Focus isn't as thrilling as I would like it to be, it doesn't do that thing you're just talking about, where that Usual Suspects thing where it's like, actually, I was a man the whole time, and she takes off her face and...
I don't think that happened in Usual Suspects, Dave. What film were you watching?
No, but you know what I mean, where it completely undoes the film you just watched.
Oh, I can't stand that, where... Yeah. It's a cheat, basically. Like, oh, by the way.
So Focus isn't a cheap cop-out type film.
No, which, now that I think about it, is slightly admirable, and I think I might have said that in my review, but
I
can't remember.
You gave it a favorable review.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, I like that it's like a R-rated, quote-unquote, original film. It's not based on a, you know, TV show or a comic book or anything. It's just like... It's an adult movie, so to speak. And I like that it did well enough at the box office that I hope... Hollywood's like, oh, let's make more adult movies, not just...
Yeah, that is encouraging.
Not just baby boy bullshit.
And it's a slick-looking movie.
Yeah, the images and like the trailers and stuff, they looked pretty
The
slick.
Guys who directed it directed like Cats and Dogs and like like really bad movies.
Cat Dog, the Nickelodeon cartoon?
I don't know. It was like... What are their names? Glenn Ferraca and Joe Requa.
They actually they wrote Bad Santa. They wrote the screenplay for Bad Santa.
All right, so yeah, this is an adult movie.
Right.
Yeah, it's not that adult. It's not as like, it's not raunchy or...
There's not full frontal.
No, there's no nudity.
There's adult themes.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Like paying taxes. And
yes. Car notes and what have you.
But there's no like...
They directed Crazy Stupid Love, which is one of those...
Oh, did they?
Those romantic comedies that I actually like, so...
And that's a good-looking movie, too.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Gosling's in it. I mean, have you seen those ads?
Yeah.
Speaking of good-looking movies, Jeff saw The Lazarus Effect. How was that?
Well, The Lazarus Effect is the antithesis of everything you just said about Focus. It is not rated R. It is not for adults. It doesn't look good at all. It's not visually appealing whatsoever. There are no charming stars.
So it's a must-see, is what you're saying.
This is a terrible, terrible film.
I like Olivia Wilde. Is she at all good in the film or no?
There's nobody particularly bad in the film. All the actors...
It actually has a good cast. Like, yeah. Mark Duplass is in it.
I'm a Mark Duplass fan. I love the puffy chair. I liked him in The One I Love. He was the one bright spot in Tammy. Aside from Susan Sarandon, she was good.
It's a weird cast. It's because it's like indie film people who are just in this horror movie, which you don't actually see that often.
Well, they're cheap. I say that in my review. These are cheap actors. They're solid actors. You got Olivia Wilde, Donald Glover from Community, Mark Duplass from the movies we referenced, Evan Peters, who's a heartthrob from American Horror Story.
The ladies love him.
He's also in X-Men Days of Future Past.
He was actually good in that. I was surprised because I don't tend to like him, but I thought he was good in X-Men.
And these are all solid actors, and they're not doing a bad job, but there's nobody that really, you know, takes the reins and knocks it out of the park performance-wise. The real stinker here... is everything else.
When I read that it was a single location, it's in that room, the whole movie?
There's two locations, really. There's this science lab that 85% of the film takes place in. And then there's Mark Duplass and Olivia Wilde's, they're a couple, their apartment.
It sounds like Hollow Man, where Hollow Man was in that underground lab the whole movie.
Very similar, except that was much better, and that's not a very good movie.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, 85% of this film takes place in a science lab that really reminded me, I said it in my review, a Resident Evil level from the PlayStation game. Yeah. Also, it reminded me of a GoldenEye 64 level. Because it's nothing but silver rectangles. Ugh. That's all this. That's all I can describe about the science lab. There's no distinguishing things. I don't know what room we're in at any given time.
Yeah, it's a Resident. It's a, like a room from Resident Evil, but one of the ones you would have merely walked through in three steps and opened the door and kept going.
It's just visually banal. It's just terrible to look at.
And the banality of Resident Evil, is that what you're trying to say?
No. Resident Evil's a fun game.
Well, it's the banality of the Resident Evil movies. Yeah. Because they have those labs in those movies, and they're all just interchangeable white rooms with, you know.
Yeah. Although I'd argue that those movies are scarier than this.
Wow.
because the scares in this film, and this is a horror movie, the scares amount to nothing but, you know, you get the few jump scares with the music screeches.
Oh, I'm scared.
And literally, in one scene, a character is wearing a pig mask.
Oh, ooh, good.
And that's, Jesus.
That's totally the big makes scare. Sense.
That's I can't see this. It's too scary.
Without spoiling it, because some people might want to see it even after
we'll put it in the fridge. You don't want it to go bad.
Yeah, make
put
sure
some,
you
put some ready wrap on it.
The kills in this film are so bland. And most of them take place off screen, but there's...
Oh, that's good. That's always good for a horror movie.
Well, it's a PG-13 horror movie, so it's not rated R, so there's no... Like Chris said in a private conversation, there's no bite to this film.
It's
toothless.
It's one of those horror movies that's geared towards tweens, which... It's fine. I mean, I guess tweens need movies too, but it's just... It's frustrating, like...
Yeah, these are make-out movies, essentially.
Like the official Twitter for Blumhouse.
That's the production company behind this.
They're retweeting everyone who's saying Lazarus Effect is good, and it's all like tweens on Twitter, just like OMG, it was the scariest. No, stop it,
Man. They've been doing that for months, though.
Yeah,
even before the movie came
out. Yeah, they were.
That's pretty. That's
the only way I knew about it was because of them retweeting people like, "Man, that movie's scary. It looks scary."
Yeah,
it's just bottom of the barrel. No, you know, it's stuff that, you know, there's no thought put into it.
No, none. This is a money grab, if I've ever seen one. And Blumhouse, that's what they do. They make these cheap horror films: Sinister, Insidious,
Slither.
They did not
Slither. Nope.
But I know Jeff doesn't care for them that much, but I actually like some of these movies. I mean, I like Insidious. I like Sinister. I even like the first Paranormal Activity, which is also them.
I enjoyed the first Paranormal Activity, but these are movies designed to generate sequels and just...
And they're all profit, which is a smart business model, but it's also, it's like a...
Well, speaking of profit, how did it do?
It opened in fifth place, I believe.
That's really bad for Blumhouse.
Yeah.
Really, really bad, especially when it opened against a movie like Focus, which stars Will Smith, who should have been on the downslope of his superstardom, but this sounds like he's, you know, kind of either plateaued or, you know, pulled the stick up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want Will Smith to have a comeback. I
like Will Smith.
Yeah,
a lot.
It seems like he's realized, like, I just need to not take as much stakes on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let me just do a few of these middle movies for a while.
There's no need to make blockbusters single time.
Yeah, you don't have to always make a franchise film.
Which Jake Gyllenhaal has proved that this year. Like, you can just take on these small roles and maybe great things can happen if you team up with the right director.
Yeah, you can maybe not get nominated for Best Actor in leading performance.
Even though you did your damnedest.
But back to Lazarus Effect. My goodness. This movie is so bad. It's so bad. I would never, ever recommend seeing this. It's an utter waste of time. And it's short, but not short enough.
I mean, I'm one of those people who's just like, if it's a horror movie, I'm always like, I'll see it. But even this movie, based on the trailers, I'm like, I could go my whole life without fucking seeing this.
You can make a really effective horror movie, scary movie, without it being R-rated.
Right.
I mean, it's not guaranteed, but you can do it. The, I mean, the others was PG-13, and that's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's true.
The Ring remake, which I don't think is particularly scary, but I know a lot of people do think it's really scary. Yeah. That's PG-13.
Yeah. I mean,
was Honeymoon rated R?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that seems like a Blumhouse movie.
No.
No, you don't.
I don't think. I think that has more class.
You know, it does. Yeah, that's a good point. This the Lazarus Effect is 100% classless.
Right. Well, Blumhouse produced Oscar-winning film Whiplash.
That's true. So I'm glad they're taking risks. Like, I want them to. You know, I mean, nothing against Blumhouse. They, for the most part, they know what they're doing. You know,
they turned down Tusk.
Blumhouse turned down Tusk.
Smith, Kevin Smith tried to get Blumhouse. A24
picked up Tusk.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
I'm typically a fan of A24, but that move might
a little
have been
switcheroo there.
Yes.
How does the Lazarus Effect compare to Flatliners, which it's clearly a remake of?
It doesn't compare.
All right.
It's completely aping the entire idea of Flatliners.
Right.
And it also has some, I don't know, like I say in my review, this film plays fast and loose with its own rules, which Insidious also does.
Right.
And it makes things up as it goes along, and it abandons ideas that it brings up. There's a lot of Catholic symbolism and references in the first part of this film that are completely, completely forgotten about once we get to the end. Completely.
I just don't get, like, why when she comes back from the dead, she has to be evil. Like, what is that? Like, what...
Don't
no explanation.
Me.
She just back. Oh, she's just back in evil.
Haven't you ever seen Event Horizon?
that nothing involving people coming back from the dead is in that movie.
No. Well, funny you say that. Sam Neill does come into this film and tear his own eyes out, which is odd.
Once you go through the Event Horizon, you can never come back.
That's Dave. I don't think you've ever seen Event Horizon based on this conversation.
It was too scary. I had to shut it off.
Dave writes his own. Dave read the novelization he bought at Barnes & Noble.
I just assumed the ending.
Oh, boy. Well.
All right. So that's what's new in movies.
Yeah.
So
we're only 17 minutes in.
Well,
can we milk this a little more?
Well, I mean.
Let me get my milking bucket out.
Our pail and our stool. I mean, we're still in the beginning of the year ho-humness. I mean, we're officially in March now, so we're going to start picking up steam come April. April is pretty much when the summer movie season starts now.
Yes.
So,
well, everybody knows you put your bikini on in April and lay out and catch some rays.
Yeah.
I wear my bikini all year round.
I know. We've been meaning to talk to you about that.
It's starting to smell.
I guess Ex Machina might be the first real movie coming out that we have any interest in whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's A24's robot movie. Oh, and Chappie, which
comes
out next
week. Nobody's interested in Chappie. In fact, didn't I read something where they canceled press?
our press screening has not been canceled, so we're the lucky ones, but several press screenings, they've been moved to the Thursday night before the release, which is never a good sign.
I find it interesting that you equate us with being the lucky ones that our press screening hasn't been canceled.
Also, I could be wrong because we thought our press screening of The Interview was still happening, and Dave drove all the way to King of Prussia.
Yeah, we should send some emails this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
do some our due diligence.
Because that actually won't work either, because I sent several emails saying, is the interview screening still on? And I got several.
You betcha.
It sure is.
Because if I'm standing out front of the Chappie Plex, no one's there.
With your Chappie t-shirt on.
Oh, man. All right. So, yeah, Chappie is coming out next week, and we might or might not have a review.
Who knows? It might be good. You never know. You never know. You never know what you're going to get.
No, you don't.
It's not going to be good.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the next entry in our director series for Kathryn Bigelow.
Strange Days.
Right. So if you haven't watched Strange Days yet, stop the podcast and watch it during this break.
Yes.
We'll be back in 2.5 hours. Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of CutPrintFilm.com. A film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
Cutprint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
We've all got our half shirts on.
Yeah. Assless pants.
Our pantsless asses. And Prince is going to sue us now.
Yeah. Sorry, Prince.
That's getting pulled off of YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who cares? It was worth it.
It was.
Because I love me some Prince.
All 11 seconds of that was worth getting all the revenue ripped from our hands. Okay, so we are about to jack into Catherine Bigelow's Strange right. Days.
Put your squid helmets on.
We're going to tap into the circuit board of the soul.
Yes.
As Ray Fiennes describes
and
it.
We assure you there'll be no blackjacks in this episode.
No, unless Dave Double Down Costco wants to bet $40 on something.
Too rich for my blood.
Yeah, I didn't think enough to finish that joke, but... He bet on something.
It's all right.
So, yeah, Strange Days came out in 1995, directed by Catherine Bigelow, that's starring right. Ralph Fiennes, Angela Bassett, Juliette Lewis, Tom Sizemore, and Vincent D'Onofrio, among a host of other people.
Yeah. And this is part of our director series.
That's right.
And I say this every week, but this is just for if you're not familiar with it. The director series is a thing where we pick a director, we pick three films, and then we talk about those three films over three episodes.
And I think we usually play a little something before we get started.
I'm not familiar with it. Can you play it and remind me?
I sure can.
It's the Cut Print Film Director Series.
Action.
Directors!
Pass the popcorn. Put a piece in my mouth.
Mm-mm, this is good popcorn.
And as
Dave, did you change your oil? I taste a little oil on your fingers.
Yeah, that's grapeseed oil.
Oh. As always, we encourage you, our listeners, if you have a specific director you want us to talk about on the next director series, tweet it at us, email us, whatever it is, do it.
Yeah, send us, Pony Express. We don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lie and say my pick was sent by a listener.
Okay.
Wow. Well, we're not ready for that.
Yeah, we're not even there yet. Also, my pick is next, so let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Don't get nuts. Okay, so let's get into the plot synopsis for 1995 Strange Days.
Ah, yes.
Set in Los Angeles 2 days before the end of 1999, Strange Days introduces us to Lenny Nero, played by Ralph Fiennes, an ex-cop turned sleazy hustler who hawks the newest underground thrill on the black market, a squid, a headpiece that allows one to transmit digital recordings of other people's thoughts, feelings, and memories into their brain. As Lenny describes it, this is real life, pure and uncut, straight from the cerebral cortex. Lenny deals clips, which is the software, as well as squids.
Kind of like hardware. We do.
Yeah, we do deal out clips. The hot stuff. He deals out clips and hardware for this new and illegal entertainment system, and while sex and violence are the most popular themes, Lenny refuses to deal in blackjack, slang for snuff clips, which deals with people dying.
Right.
Lenny is nursing a broken heart after his girlfriend, the punk singer Faith Justin, played by Juliette Lewis at her absolute worst.
Boy, oh boy, did she stink in this.
After she left him, and he spends a lot of the time with clips he recorded when they were together. Faith is now involved with Philo Grant. Am I saying that right? Or is it Philo?
It's Philo.
Philo Grant, played by Michael Wincott.
Like a Philo Fax.
Yes, yes. We're all familiar with those.
Well, if you're from the 1980s like I am.
who is a music business tycoon who once managed Jericho One, played by Glenn Plummer,
right.
A hip-hop musician and political activist whose murder has sent L.A. into a state of chaos. When a clip emerges that shows that Jericho One was killed by L.A. police officers, Lenny finds his life in danger, and he tries to escape possible death on both sides of the law with the help of his friend, Mace Manson, played by Angela Bassett. Dave, you all right?
It's a very complicated film.
Is everybody still paying attention? I have one sentence left.
Did you mention the serial killer yet? Going
no,
around killing
I wasn't
the...
going to.
All right.
But I figured we would get to that in our discussion.
All right.
Strange Days was written by James Cameron
right.
in collaboration with a former film critic, Jay Cox, and this was based on a dream Cameron had in the 80s.
Man, James Cameron, needs to stop dreaming.
Yeah. One added thing I wanted to throw in, because I'm done the synopsis, that this was filmed after Catherine Bigelow and James Cameron had divorced.
Right.
And boy, does the turmoil in that relationship show.
Okay. Was it in development before that?
I think
though?
So.
Okay. So
I think
then
so.
That
I think there was a lot. Contracts had been signed.
All right.
Which led to this goddamn movie that we're about to discuss.
All right. Well, right off the bat, I'm going to say I do not dislike Strange Days. I know Jeff was not a fan. I don't know where Dave rests because he's a.
Dave rests.
He's some sort of Martian.
Under my porch.
There like are a possum.
There are things about Strange Days that I like.
All right. Yes.
As they relate to Catherine Bigelow. The movie itself, I despise.
And despise? Oh, my.
Okay. I'm not going to say despise, but I'm in the same boat as Dave.
Right.
There are many things I really like about this film.
The direction is phenomenal.
Yes.
It's great direction.
So let's talk about that first, because I like to.
Mostly.
Yes, it's mostly good.
There's some bad parts. Yes.
Really? I can't think of a single bad direction part in the film.
Let's talk about the good direction choices here. The film opens with a really, really intense chase scene.
Right. So there's a lot of point of view shots in the film because the gimmick of the film is that people wear these things on their heads and they record what they're seeing through their own eyes. And people then watch those to, you know, experience other people's, you know, highs and lows and stuff like that. So Catherine Bigelow, she couldn't find the right camera to use to get these shots to be convincing. So basically she had Lightstorm Entertainment. They're the people who produced, they're the company that produced the film. They spent an entire year developing a camera just for this film.
And boy, I've never heard of a worse return on investment.
Well, they found a GoPro after that with that camera.
And, you know, true. Obviously there have been, you know, point of view shots in films long before this film. I mean, one of our former directors, Brian De Palma, uses them a lot. But what makes this film's use of them, you know, unique is they're very organic looking. Like the De Palma point of view shots, you can tell it's a camera. You can tell it's someone holding a steady cam and, you know, moving the way a camera moves. The shots in this, they move like, you know, the human head basically moves looking at stuff.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with that.
I was too. And I like the all the point of view shots I really liked.
Right. Some of them I don't even know how the hell she did it. Like it looks, it's I'm not going to say flawless, but that there's the opening shot with a guy, you know, jumping off a roof and missing and falling. It's so fluid and it's edited in such a unique way that it really just looks like some guy really just jumped off a roof to film this.
Yeah, yeah, and that scene specifically, him jumping from building to building, which is a major part of the Matrix, like that kind of irked me a little bit that they steal so much from this movie for the Matrix, and then that is in it also. It seemed like they just took this as their seed of inspiration and rewrote it.
Well, this film is very much
with more shooting.
It's very much in debt to the cyberpunk genre, and so is the Matrix. So I just think that's sort of like just tropes that have just been floating around in this genre.
This movie takes place in the city of 1995. I've never seen a movie that looks more 1995 than this. And previously, it was the film Seven,
right?
Which has this type of look. There's metal everywhere.
Right.
It's just this chain link city, essentially.
What the fuck happened in 4 years?
I don't know. That's the other thing that I would like to talk about, but I want to talk about things that I like first.
Okay.
I like Ralph Fiennes. I think he's a great actor.
Right.
I hate this character.
But I think the character's supposed to be despicable. I mean,
but I think Ralph Fiennes is doing everything in his power to make this a good performance.
Right.
Of a character that doesn't have much going for it.
Yeah, I will never say a bad word about Ralph Fiennes, but this character, I don't know. Do you think the character is intentionally despicable or poorly written?
He's like a porn peddler, essentially. Yeah. And the whole.
Yeah, but that's made out to be a bigger deal than it actually is in real life. Like, someone who sells porn on the black market would not be.
Like they're not as despised now in our 21st century world.
Okay.
But keep in mind, this was made in 1995. Yeah. Back then,
Especially back then, men had long hair, yeah, like Tom Sizemore and Ralph Fiennes.
The internet wasn't as prevalent as it is now, so pornography wasn't as seeped into everything as it is now.
And there wasn't hard empirical data to prove that no one's attracted to Juliette Lewis.
Right. I don't think she's bad looking.
Neither does Ralph Fiennes.
let's not talk about her yet. So yeah. Ralph Fiennes. All right. My favorite part of the movie, other than the direction, is Angela Bassett's character and
she
performance.
I think she's fantastic.
I love just the idea of this character because it's this black female limo driver
who's also security,
right? And she's just a total badass. She has insanely toned muscles that made me feel like a pathetic girly man.
Yes, this film stars Angela Bassett and Angela Bassett's arms.
Right. Yeah, you don't see them right away, but then at one point she takes off her jacket. And she's wearing this like sleeveless shirt, and she has these insanely toned arms.
Yeah. And it's a really cool, strong character who absolutely takes no shit from anybody.
It's such a refreshing thing to see a strong female character in a film from like the 90s. Like, because there aren't a lot of characters like that.
Yeah, she's by far, I'd say her and Tom Sizemore are the most interesting characters in this film. Mm-hmm. And Tom Sizemore plays, is his name Mace?
Mace is Angela Bass's character. Oh. Tom Sizemore's character is named Max, I believe.
Max, okay, yeah. I get the
M's.
The M's switcheroo'd on me.
Mace is a cool character because she kind of felt like she should be in a Quentin Tarantino movie, like the badass limo driver.
As much as I don't mind Ralph Fiennes in this film, I wish the film had just been about Mace. Like she's the most... Like,
and that's another problem. This film has three or four different stories going on at once that just don't gel.
Yeah, this film is packed to the gills. It's way too... 2 hours and 25 minutes
of it.
It's too long, and there are too many subplots. But a part of me kind of appreciates that sort of go for broke style of filmmaking, where it's like, I got so many ideas, I'm putting them all in this fucking movie.
But they're not all strong enough to carry an entire film.
No, I don't. I won't disagree with that. But
especially the Vincent D'Onofrio and William Fichtner characters,
who are they're great character actors in general. And I was happy when they just showed up in the film.
But they have nothing to do.
No.
And they're given this entire subplot of nothing to do.
Right.
That nobody cares about.
No.
No.
It almost has no bearing. This entire sequence of with them killing this rapper activist, Jericho One, what is this doing in the film?
Well, at the same time, it's that's clearly a reflection of the Rodney King beating in real life and how that... It's a critique of the LA police force, because you got to keep in mind, back in the 90s, the LA police force were fucking despised because they were, they've cleaned up their act now, but back then, maybe not even so, they haven't actually.
Yeah,
but
back then when unwarranted black men would be.
Back then in the a thing of the past, which does not happen now. Back then, there was this huge outcry against the LAPD, and rightfully so, because a lot of them were just, racist lunatics with guns.
Yeah.
Again, unlike now when all cops are perfect and blameless.
So this takes place in, LA riot times.
Right.
But this Jericho One subplot is...
Yeah, he's like a rapper who's taking down the police force. I don't know.
I'd say it's not a poor idea. It's poorly handled in the film. Like, I
much
feel
like every other idea in the film. They're all good ideas that are poorly handled story-wise. And that's you lay that blame at James Cameron's feet because he wrote this.
Yes. I feel like you should have had one or the other. You should have had the serial killer subplot, which you have, or you should have had the rapper getting killed by the racist cop subplot. The fact they cram them two together. Yeah. And it's clear they care more about the serial killer subplot, which they shouldn't. It feels like the more important plot should be the Jericho One.
But okay, I want to interrupt you before you start. You say that the activist being killed, that is more important,
right?
But the serial killer subplot is more interesting to me, at least.
See, I don't know. I don't think as interesting because like there are so many goddamn I gotta catch the killer movies. I feel like it'd be more interesting to have
a
sci-fi movie about like a really important theme like
but
that.
But the way this killer's MO is so horrifying.
I'll agree with that.
So unique that it would have made this film something really special, especially in the wake of Seven, because this movie came out like a month after Seven came out. So you already had this wild serial killer film.
Right.
that was already in production at the same time as this. And I think...
But you know, my argument is that I think that belongs in a different movie.
Well, there's two threads that make this squid technology appealing. It's, all right, what if we caught a cop killing someone on camera, right. And what if a serial killer was using this stuff?
Right.
And they tried to do those both in
the
same movie.
Yeah, this could have been one or the other. This movie could have been one or the other. Instead, they just jammed them both in,
right.
And it's so bloated. And, you know, instead of a 90-minute film, we have a 2-hour and 25-minute right. film. It's insanity.
And on top of all that, we have this...
This musician subplot.
The Lenny Nero love-struck plot, which fucking bugged me to no end.
Oh, it's horrible. It's the worst. It's the least of all the plots, and it's the one they focus on the most, I think.
Although the whole thing, the film itself reminded me of, it's like Inherent Vice, but with virtual reality. Because it's in that sort of noir trope where it's the main character who's obsessed with the old
right.
flame and, you know.
But whereas Inherent Vice has these beautiful, beautiful scenes
right.
and the cinematography is gorgeous, this looks like garbage. This like, the cinematography looks filthy. And I understand that's how it looks. That's how all movies in 1995 looked.
Right.
That's just how
yeah.
they made movies. Everything's garbage. It's always, yeah, there's garbage rolling through the streets. It's wet everywhere for some reason.
Yeah.
And there's chain links around everything.
But it's also supposed to be, you know, dystopian
right,
end
right.
of the world sort of. Stuff too.
Yeah,
right.
Everything was filmed very tight, like
mm-hmm.
a tight dystopian.
Right.
It never expanded for you to see.
And
what was
nobody
going on.
Stopped listening to grunge ever.
Yeah, no one stopped wearing flannel and
yeah.
Having the big hair.
And for some reason, Skunk Anansie is playing at the New Year's Eve concert or something in the middle of a riot.
Right.
I don't understand what this film's trying to say.
It's the story is like reminiscent of all those cyberpunk things. Like
right.
Have you ever read like a William Gibson novel?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
batshit. Like
right.
there's always way too much going on. None of it makes any sense, and
right.
you always come out of it with a sense of like, huh,
yeah,
that was pointless.
I don't know. I mean,
this is so much William Gibson when it should have been Harlan Ellison.
Right.
It could have like if they went with that serial killer aspect, it would have been such a great.
Yeah, The whole serial killer who makes his victims see he's killing them, that's straight up Harlan Ellison sci-fi sort of stuff. But
I will say, however, Existenz is a movie that is almost identical to this, but it's a lot worse.
Yeah.
This movie is fairly tone deaf about technology, but Existenz
right.
is absolutely mute, deaf, dumb, and blind to it.
I don't know. I mean, again, I agree with both of your points, but at the same time, I feel like, I said this already, but I like that it's so overstuffed, as weird as it is. Even though I don't think it works, I appreciate that as overstuffed as it is, they do a hell of a job making all the overstuffed stuff tie together. I mean.
Oh, they do.
I mean, I appreciate that.
Everything does tie up, but is it really satisfying at the end of that film when it is shown that the two crooked cops, Vincent D'Onofrio and William Fichtner, they are shown to have killed Jericho One
right.
in cold blood. Is that really satisfying, that scene?
See, I feel like that should have happened. That reveal should have happened earlier in the
yeah.
film. Because I agree that you find out that, oh, by the way, the reason these two cops are, you know, chasing Lang Nero is around is because they're racist lunatics. That happens literally like 20 minutes before the ending, and that should have happened like in
yeah.
the first hour probably,
because
yeah. then it would have been a more rewarding payoff.
It could have just even been the opening scene.
Yeah, like yeah, the opening scene should have been the cops killing this rapper.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it really should have. I mean that you have to lay on the feet of Kathryn Bigelow. That
right.
that's a direction choice there.
Yeah, but again, I do think it's a script problem too. I mean,
it is. I mean, James Cameron should not ever be allowed to write dialogue because this film's dialogue stinks. It stinks like a corpse.
I think the only one who delivers the
I got a jam, buddy.
the only person in the film who delivers the dialogue well is Angela Bassett, just because she's such a good actress.
Well, and she's angry all the time.
Right.
And this is angry dialogue.
Right.
There's no room for emotion
right.
or anything like that other than anger.
I want to go back to one of my issues, which is that this is 1999
right.
being filmed in 95.
Well, yeah, it's which makes no sense.
And that's one of the problems I have with it, because it's the world is never built correctly. Like, I never feel like this is real Like, I feel like if you panned out a little bit, like, the rest of the world is just like,
it's just
normal.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
It's only this one area.
What's going on in that block of L.A.?
Yes.
Where they're still using mini discs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange. Why on earth wouldn't you adjust the screenplay to say that it's 2025 or something like that? Because
it seemed like they really wanted that millennium thing, which people were so hyped up on.
Yeah.
No, well, they weren't even hyped up on it in 1995. Y2K wasn't a thing people were saying.
Yeah, but I think people were aware, you know, the millennium was coming and the century was ending. I think that was a big thing, and I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't mind that it's set in 1999.
It bugs me because it's 4 years in the future from when the film came out. Are you kidding me? Like, what kind of?
I have like a soft spot in my heart for films that are set in the quote unquote future that's not the future. Like, I love that. Escape from New York is set in 1997 and New York is a prison island. Like, I love that. Like, that'll never happen.
what year did that come out? That was the 80s.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's when the screenplay was written.
2001 is 2 years after this, but that was filmed in 1968. Right. So you know, that's a good buffer there. 30 years,
even 10 years or so.
Right.
Which is, I mean, I think this was written in 1985 or so. And so to set it in 1999 makes sense then.
Oh, okay. So
but if you're making the film in 1995,
that close to
I'd
agree.
Are we talking about making it 1999? It's 4 years away.
What? Yeah, I don't know. I guess James Cameron just took him a really long time to flesh that dream he had out.
But he didn't. He did flesh it out. He fleshed it out for 2 hours and 25 minutes of film. It's unnecessarily bloated, and there's way too many ideas happening at once.
And even with Ralph Fiennes, like it's never interesting. Like he's never carrying the film.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. He's
trying.
Trying. Yeah, he's trying. In theory, like on paper, it's an interesting character. This guy dealing these videos, and he runs this whole underground sort of world. Mm-hmm. And in theory, you know, again on paper, it's interesting that he's obsessed with his old girlfriend and blah 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 blah. But as much as Ralph Fiennes is trying, Juliette Lewis, not trying at all. Let's talk about her performance, because I would say this is the weakest aspect of the film, is
a
her
black hole of charisma.
And Juliette Lewis is one of those actresses. I don't think she's in general a terrible actress. I just feel like she has no range. Like in the Martin Scorsese Cape Fear, she's very good in that because she's playing to her strengths of this sort of like clueless young girl who's like in love with a guy who's a serial killer. Like that's a good performance. And I would say even her performance in Natural Born Killers, where she's so fucking
she's a lunatic,
she's a batshit insane, that's a good performance. But
here she's supposed to play a normal person,
right? This normal
and
singer.
I'm not buying it.
No, it's not a good performance.
Like, say, speaking of bad performances, she performs with a band twice for some reason in this film.
Yeah, those are things.
What are
like,
we doing?
And it's like a full song. Things
whole
like
3 minutes.
What are we doing?
Yeah, when your film is 2.5 hours long, that's where you start cutting. You start cutting songs.
That first time she was about to start singing, I was like, I screamed out loud, wait, is Juliette Lewis going to sing a song?
Well, I mean, she's in a band now, so she is a singer.
Juliette Lewis
so is
and
Jeff,
the
but he's not singing right
now.
Exactly.
And the songs were written by PJ Harvey, who is an excellent songwriter.
She's a great songwriter.
But you know what? Put those on the soundtrack. Don't put it in the film. It's like those old films from the 30s where it's like, Abbott and Costello are going to take a break now, and then the singer's going to come out first.
And the whole performance, when she's performing these songs, it looks like a Gravity Kills video.
She's whipping her hair around.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And again, later on, like I said, we get a Skunk and Antsy video.
Right.
Which is, for anybody that's not familiar, is a British grunge band, grunge industrial band. Wait, what do we...
I would have much rather Frankenstein have performed Putting on the Ritz.
Out of nowhere. And the Juliette Lewis performance, it's so grating that it just pissed me off that Ralph Fiennes' character is so obsessed with her.
I don't buy it for
like,
1 second.
Like when you, again, bringing it back to Inherent Vice, you understand why Joaquin Phoenix's character is obsessed with Catherine Waterston. Because I'd be obsessed with that character too. But Juliette Lewis in this film, especially because she's constantly like, just mean to
him.
She's
completely uninterested.
Right, yeah.
I don't get it. Yeah, in Inherent Vice, there is a kinetic energy between those two characters. They're like magnets.
Right.
There's way more energy between him and Mace.
Right.
Yeah.
And, which is it's intentional, but it's like it's annoying. It's like just give up and make out with Mace, which he does at the end. But
that part is satisfying about the conclusion of this film. And that part is.
There's also a part right before the ending where, as much as I hate the Juliette Lewis performance, I feel like they realized that it was a bad character because they actually have a really nice scene near the end where. Angela Bassett's like, you know, just fucking get, like, stop going after this girl. She clearly doesn't care about you anymore. And Ralph Fiennes' character says, like, have you ever been in love with someone and they don't love you back? And Angela Bassett's character says, yes, because clearly she's in love with Lenny. Yeah. And he says, you know, that doesn't stop you from loving them. You're going to just do what you have to do. So I feel like that was an attempt to sort of rectify how annoying the character is. But it's like too little too late because that happens literally like 20 minutes before the ending. Like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and then you have
because, I mean, well, I don't walking it back. I've been in relationships where the person I was in a relationship with was a lunatic and everyone around me was like, please break up with this girl. And I was like, no, you don't understand. So I could sort of understand
it. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Can I say what I liked about this movie?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
There's one specific connection I made, and this might be a long shot.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
I don't
this.
Believe it.
But
so it's a lot like the Mighty Ducks.
No, this film is redeemed because I think that it's Catherine Bigelow's love letter to Brian De Palma's Blowout.
You think so?
They both open with an out-of-context point-of-view shot, and then turn into these movies about hookers getting killed and they're both movies about making movies.
Yes.
Which Blowout is a movie about the sound of making movies, and this is like about, you know, the killer's making those movies with his mind.
Right.
There's actually
I like this theory.
There's actually a scene where he like frames the shot. But then they both movies end at these huge celebrations.
Yeah.
There's actually shots in the end of what the hell is this movie called? Strange Days.
Right.
That look like those shots at that bicentennial celebration. Yeah.
The Liberty Festival, it's called.
Yeah, with all the confetti everywhere. And I just like, as I'm watching it, I was drawing like visual comparisons to those two movies. And
that's
I was like,
that's a neat connection.
I like that.
Good work, Dave.
Did,
for once, it wasn't goofy.
Has she ever said anything
like
that?
No, I typed in Strange Days Blowout and I can't find anything.
Sounds like an editorial is in the works.
I'm gonna do some side-by-side gifts.
One
of you running down the street and one of Chris running down the street side-by-side.
Who, me?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, but it'll be fun.
I hope there aren't any gifts of me running down the street.
No, I'm
going
to film them.
Unbeknownst to me.
I'm going to use my squid so you won't know.
All right. Let's talk about Tom Sizemore.
A real squid that I shoved the cameras.
This seems very complicated.
Let me get Peto on the line.
Let me just say...
from the Hunger Games, of course.
A part of me hopes that Tom Sizemore's character in this is the same character from Point Break, because he's a key. Because in this film, he's an ex-cop, and
he's
so
like, it's been a crazy fucking 5 years.
So I'd like to imagine, because they're both Catherine Bigelow movies. He's an ex-cop. He was a cop in that movie. I'm going to pretend that's the connection. He's the same. Because we never learned that character's full name.
I like this theory even more than the one Dave just presented.
The Dave Sensical theory.
This is fantastic.
It's the same character, just older and fatter, and now he's serial killer.
And he has long hair.
Yes, which isn't real. And I love that because the whole movie, I was like, God, that fucking hair is fake. So when they pulled off at the end, I was like, thank God.
Yeah, he looks like Sam Kinison.
He does. So let's talk about Tom Sizemore in this film. What did everyone think of Tom Sizemore?
Or just in general.
Yeah.
I loved him.
Yeah.
I thought he was great.
It was a good
such a fun character.
Right.
And I'll be honest, even though I've watched movies before, so I knew the turn was coming eventually, I bought that this character was really, he loved Lenny.
Right, because he's really his only friend.
So you mean
friend.
Neo? I mean Nero? Sorry.
He's his only friend outside of Angela Bassett's character.
And I was buying that. Tom Sizemore really sells the hell out of this character just being a loyal and true friend.
Right.
And, you know, this would really come as a shock to anybody that hasn't watched 1 million movies.
Yes.
you know?
I really liked his death scene.
Where he falls off the balcony.
Like him like, you're coming with me, asshole.
That was good.
Yeah.
I liked it, but I also felt like the way they filmed him landing on the top of that van was very poorly done.
Like they just threw a dummy.
Not even that. It's clearly just, he clearly just, like he leans back and just falls.
Yeah.
There was no impact at all. And he's supposed to be falling from this high height.
And he was still telling Lenny the plot to the entire film as he was falling.
Yeah. Let me wrap it up for you.
In true Bond villain fashion. what's his name?
Me
Tom Sizemore's character explains everything.
Yes.
Turn by turn.
You
to
see,
Lenny.
Blah, blah, blah. Ugh,
me
enough.
And Faith are in love, but now she's going to turn on me.
Man, yeah. I didn't buy that at all.
No,
Tom Sizemore and Juliette Lewis's character banging the whole
Not
time.
Not at all, because it comes out of nowhere. It's never hinted at whatsoever.
That was like in a Casino, where you find out that Joe Pesci and Sharon Stone are having an affair.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is not believable.
Hey, this is not as good as Goodfellas. And neither is Strange Days.
Well, come on, that's arguable.
What else?
Yeah, that's
what
all
else
I
can
got.
We talk about? I mean, the
it was disappointing.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. This is a disappointing movie because there's so many grand ideas, and like we said, the two major plot threads, two out of three, are so interesting that I would have taken a movie about either or. Instead we get a movie about both plus another less interesting plot thread.
Yeah.
This movie is also like a little prophetic. It's got some things in it, like
absolutely,
like cops having no, like the GoPro thing, like
yeah.
that debate with cops. You're getting some of that.
And
here.
even if the technology is poorly rendered in this film, it's still accurate for
what
our society has become.
The ideas are better than the execution.
Yeah. Instead of being in our head, we just all have phones.
Right.
Where
exactly.
We're recording.
Yeah. We're not wearing latex heads.
Yeah, we don't have
ridiculous.
We don't have VCRs in our pockets. It's
absolutely fucking ridiculous.
And we all aren't wearing wigs on top of our wigs.
God. Yeah, this was a truly disappointing movie. I was expecting a lot more.
Once again, Jeff picks the worst movie.
Sorry, everyone.
I'm going to be the outlier and say, even though I agree that the movie is way too convoluted, there's way too many plot, and it's not a great movie, I'm going to say I would call this a film I quote-unquote liked. I don't...
Okay. So see it or skip it. Jeff.
I know. Is this a new segment we're doing?
Jeff's going to skip it. Okay, Chris, see it or skip it.
Even though the film... I'm ignoring you.
Chris
even
is
going
to see it.
All right, good.
Even though the film did terribly at the box office, it cost...
Yeah, this bombed.
It cost $42 million to make. It made $7 million.
Ooh.
It was actually very well received. Roger Ebert gave this 4 stars. It got very good reviews, and... I would argue that I think it sort of deserves that. I appreciate...
It's 4 out of 80 stars.
That seems like an insane amount of stars, but I don't know. I appreciate that it's trying, you know? I'd rather take I'll call this a successful failure, an interesting failure.
Yeah.
I'd rather have an interesting failure like this movie than something like fucking... This reminded me of Johnny Mnemonic with Keanu Reeves, where it's that shitty... bullshit cyberpunk grungy nonsense where it's like this stinks from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Or
it reminded me a lot of Existence, like
me
almost
too.
To a T.
Yeah.
It's a bigger world than Existence.
Yeah.
It's definitely more ambitious.
And instead of Jude Law, we have a superior actor.
We have M. Gustav.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's enough in this I like for me to say it's not a total waste.
No, it's not a total waste. It's just, it's disappointing because there's so much about it that should have worked.
Right.
That doesn't end up working. And whether you want to blame Cameron or whether you want to blame Bigelow, you got to blame one of them.
I'm going to blame Cameron just because I feel like Catherine Bigelow directed the hell out of this fucking movie. I mean, Dave, what were you saying that the direction wise you didn't like? You didn't say what's
the, there's one scene where Rafe, Fiennes, and Mace, what's her name?
Angela Bassett.
They go back to his apartment like after a chase,
uh-huh.
And it's just very poorly done. He keeps like drinking vodka.
Something, yeah.
And then he says something like, oh, come rub my neck. And then she comes over and starts rubbing his neck. And it feels like the direct, like the atmosphere is like she's going to start like, bashing his head against the wall.
Oh, she's angry the entire
film.
Yeah. She's never cracking a smile whatsoever.
And all of a sudden she's tenderly rubbing his neck. Yeah. And I'm like, what's happening here? This and then the scene where Vincent D'Onofrio shoots Jericho 1, which is an awesome rap name.
Yes.
Was very poorly Set up. It's terrible. It just felt very fake.
Blocking on it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
There's like a girl right here laughing the whole time.
At the same time, I've said it at the same time a million times in this episode. But I also feel like it's because it's supposed to be someone watching this. And someone watching something is not always going to look at the right spot as a camera would be.
Yeah, but it just felt like, oh, keep watching. Like, let's draw this out so she can look over there at the fence.
I'd agree.
Look back over here and Vincent D'Onofrio is still staring.
I'd say blocking is a major problem throughout the entire movie.
Think so?
Yeah, there's actors standing in places where I'm like, what am I supposed to get out of this? What's happening?
Yeah,
why is that person there?
I mean, there's a few things I loved from... I just love that whole scene where after Ralph Fiennes shows Tom Sizemore the video of the murder, and it's Tom Sizemore, Angela Bassett, and Ralph Fiennes, and they're just talking about what's going on, and the camera's like fucking moving around them, and that's so... I just love the energy of that
shot. I mean, there are great signatures of Catherine Bigelow in this, but it's not...
A lot of the action, like that first chase scene where
the
cops are chasing, her name's Iris, through the subway. The way that shot is wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I really did like that scene.
Action is, again, tense and intense, and she's great at filming action.
She's a phenomenal action director.
But scenes where characters are supposed to emote and they're supposed to be playing off of one another in some sort of relationship style scenario, I don't buy.
It doesn't work.
The only thing I bought again was Angela Bassett's character and her performance. Like, I liked at the end where after everything happens, I liked that Lenny Nero fucking gets out of the ambulance and he pulls her out of the car and they kiss and there's confetti everywhere. That's like a big movie ending. Yeah. I really liked that
and stuff like that. That works. Right. You know, that's big. It's big. It's big action finale type stuff, and it's
very
like
broad.
That.
There's no intricacy of it.
Yeah,
I was hoping they would just keep jacking back out of the movie wasn't real, and then
if that had happened, I would have hated the movie. But like Jeff was saying earlier, the killer's MO is very well. It's disturbing the way they do that. That whole first stalking murder sequence is very upsetting.
And it's a rape, which is very...
Even worse.
And, I'm so surprised that they were able to get away with that in a quote-unquote Hollywood movie. Because
I was shocked that I was watching it.
Yeah, it was graphic and upsetting. You don't really get a lot of that in movies, especially, like, big movies like this. So I'm surprised they let that slide.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable, to say the least.
All right, so I mean, this movie's on Netflix. If you want to watch it,
give it a watch. I mean, I feel like
skip it.
This is one of those. I wish someone would do this to this movie what that person did to The Hobbit, where they cut it down. Like, I wish someone would just do like a better edit of this, where they cut out stuff and make it work better. Because
cut the BS out.
Yeah, I feel like there's a great movie hiding in this movie.
Well, Catherine Bigelow learned from her mistakes here because she went on to win the Best Director Oscar for Hurt Locker.
Mm-hmm. And our next Catherine Bigelow film is Strange Days, Zero Dark Thirty, which is I'd say probably her best film. So
I would too.
So it's going to be interesting.
I think it's also our most modern movie we've watched so far.
It is the most fairly recent.
Contemporary. Yeah, that's what I meant to
say. Well, as far as technology goes, Existenz is the most modern movie we've watched.
And it's going to be interesting to see her jump to this because the previous Point Break and this are, I would call, action movies.
Yeah.
And even though Zero Dark Thirty has action, it's very more of a drama. So it's going to be interesting to see her jump from, and it's a, time-wise too. This is 95. Zero Dark Thirty was 2011, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, she took quite a long time
off. She took a break.
Right?
After this film...
I would too.
Yeah. After this film, well, she was also going through the divorce and stuff, so she took a break. She came back with The Hurt Locker, which got her the best...
Yeah, her and Cameron actually took a long... Long pause from
the hiatus.
Yeah.
And then she came back with The Hurt Locker, which got her the Best Director Oscar. First woman in film history to win Best Director. First and only woman, which we've said. So.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That's our discussion on Strange Days.
Right. If you disagree, if you have an opinion, tweet it at us, email us, whatever you want to do.
Or eat poison.
Yeah, or check out the sequel, Strange Days, Stranger Nights.
That didn't work at all.
I tell you what, I'm not laughing.
I laughed because I looked at Jeff, and he made a face much like the disappointed emoticon on your phone.
All right, let's recommend some movies, shall we?
If you're having movie problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 movies, and it's time to pick one. You're crazy for this one, Cutthroat Film. That's your boy.
Thanks, everyone.
Did the devil cut that track?
I'm throwing up into a bucket.
I was trying to trying to get that Jay-Z voice down. It's hard. You can't
Instead, you got Conky from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
I became a demon of some sort. All that was natural, by the way. I literally did that with my own voice. No, I didn't.
My God. That was absolutely wonderful.
A little low. I would have been. I could have been a little louder, but
we'll punch it up in post.
Okay.
Don't you worry. Oh my God!
I was hoping you were going to go into the whole song.
The whole rap.
I could have done 3 minutes of hearing that.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time.
All right. Who's going? I'll go.
Go, Jeff. Go.
I'm going to recommend a movie by two people that I typically have beat up on in recent episodes.
Chris and Dave.
No. This movie came out in 2012. It's directed by Richard Linklater, starring Jack Black. It's called Bernie.
Ah!
And I saw it for the first time this past weekend. It's on Netflix, and that's where I saw it, and that's where I've been ignoring it for 2 years.
Yeah, I've never even seen this.
I'm not a big Linklater fan, but I like Bernie, too.
I'm not
good.
Big on Linklater, and I'm not big on Jack Black.
Oh, me either.
But this movie is really, really good.
You know what's big on Jack Black is his pants.
Yes. Yes, I believe he's a size 44. 44-30. Yeah, this movie is so funny. And it's so not what I expected it to be. I thought this was going to be in line with the Coen brothers' The Lady Killers, which is I have nothing to say about that film.
I love the Coen brothers, but that stinks. That
movie. Boy, does that stink like a rotten flower bed.
That's almost unwatchable.
Yeah. But this movie is about, it's a true story about this guy named Bernie Tita, who moved into this this Texas town, and he worked for the funeral parlor. And he was just instantly loved by everybody that ever came across him. And he found this widow, played by Shirley MacLaine, who he started a relationship with. And she was a rich widow. Her husband died. And she just is the nastiest woman. Nobody likes this woman. And everybody loves Bernie. And he eventually, she is so mean to him, even though they have this relationship and she's willed all her money to him, that he snaps and kills her. And the second half of the film deals with the fallout of that. Matthew McConaughey plays the prosecutor.
He's great.
He is great. Everything about this movie is great. I loved this movie. Yeah. And it does such a great job of making you actually root for this character who committed murder.
Yeah.
And admits to committing murder. And It just gets you to
do they show the murder?
Yeah.
It gets you to feel empathy for him and hatred for the prosecutor who is actually doing the right thing.
One of my favorite parts of the movie is like Matthew McConaughey. He's sort of like an outsider character, and he doesn't understand. Like he's like, he just wants to put Bernie away. And he doesn't understand why everyone's like, don't. We love Bernie.
Yeah. The townsfolk are like saying, well, if you put me on the jury, I'm acquitting.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good because you know McConaughey's in the right. He's the good guy, but Bernie is so likable, and Jack Black plays him so sweetly, and he's just a fun little guy, you know?
My favorite part of this, it's not actually in the movie, but because of this movie, basically, the real Bernie eventually got released from jail into Richard Linklater's custody, basically. Yeah. So he lives with Richard Linklater now.
Yeah, he like lives in his backyard, like in a guest house.
What could go wrong? What could go wrong?
Academy Award nominated director found dead in his house.
Yeah, so you heard it here first. We broke the story. Richard Linklater is dead.
Oh my God.
So that's my pick.
I hope we don't get sued for libel on that.
He's not really dead unless he died. that's my pick. 2012's Bernie, directed by Richard Linklater. It is on Netflix. Watch it right now.
Yes. Turn the show off. Come back.
There's got to be some times where you're alone in a room with Bernie and you're just like,
He actually killed someone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Don't want to piss off the Burnmeister.
I'll go.
Who's next?
What was that? What was that? Is that from Strange Days?
That's from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, my God. I'll go next.
Oh, I guess it would be nice. That's what I thought it was. Oh.
No. Leonard Nimoy died on Friday, I believe. And I'm not going to say it's a sad
death. He did?
Yeah. It's sad that he's dead, but it's not tragic because he lived a long life. He had a great career.
Bernie murdered him.
Oh, my God.
If I'm not mistaken.
No one saw that coming. And I'm not a big Star Trek person, so I'm not going to recommend anything from Star Trek. I'm recommending 1978's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, in which Leonard Nimoy has a role where he wears half a leather glove, and it's very weird.
That's all you need is half of one.
Yeah. So this Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978, is actually a remake of the original film, which is from, I believe, like the 40s or the 50s. And it's directed by Philip Kaufman, and I love this movie. I'm sure most people know the plot of this film, even if you've never seen it. It's, you know, pod people from space. They replace you. They look just like you. That's really all there is to it.
Yeah.
But it's this great...
Easy special effects.
Yeah. It's this great sort
especially
of like,
if you have Donald Sutherland.
It's this great sort of like tight little well-made film. It's unnerving. It's a creepy movie. It's really... It's got a great cast. Donald Sutherland's in it. Jeff Goldblum's in it when he was young. Veronica Cartwright. Brooke Adams is in, and Leonard Nimoy plays this character named Dr. David Kibner, and Nimoy is great in this because I'm not going to spoil what his character is all about, but it's just a great sort of little supporting character performance. And I don't know, I mean,
is he a Vulcan?
Yeah,
a Vulcan body
turns out
snatcher.
He is Mr. Spock. That's the twist. And this movie, I mean, it shouldn't work. Because it's a goofy sort of plot, but it's the way the film is made is very disturbing and chilling. And this film has one of my all-time favorite practical special effects in it. It's literally a dog wearing a mask. But basically, what happens is one of the pod transfers, it goes wrong, and this guy. Earlier in the film, you see this old man who's like a homeless man, and he has a dog. And later, when you see the pod version of him, it's his dog.
With his face.
But it's the old man's face. And they literally just put this prosthetic on a dog, but it's so fucking disturbing. You just see the dog run up, and it has the old man's face, and the dog's tongue comes out of his mouth.
Oh, for God's sake.
And it just, it's horrifying. And it's just, I don't know, there's just these little moments in this. And this film has that famous thing where when the people are, you find out people are aliens, they just point at you, and they shriek. And just like,
oh my God, this is disturbing.
And just like, just the way they handle that is just upsetting. And it has an ending. I'm not going to spoil it, but the ending is upsetting. I remember I saw this as a kid originally, and just that ending haunted me for years. I saw it as a kid, and I didn't actually know what the hell it was called. I just remembered the ending.
Yeah.
And then years later, Dave is holding up a picture of the dog right now. It's horrifying.
It looks like the fly from 1954 when he's on the fly's body.
So, I highly recommend this film. If you haven't seen it, please track it down, and you'll get the creeps from it. 1978's Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
I'll go.
Dave?
I'm going to recommend Richard Linklater's Spockhood. That was a bad joke.
That just landed with a plod.
We're enacting a new policy where when Dave tells a dud, neither of us say anything.
We cross our arms and smoke a cigar.
We leave the room. We come back after the joke is cleared, like a poisonous gas.
Anyway, your turn, Dave.
I'm going to go against everything I stand for and recommend a film that released this week. It is called Power/Rangers. It is the...
Oh, that sound Jeff made was wonderful.
It is currently holding an 8.2 on IMDb. directed by the music video director Joseph Kahn. Starring James Vanderbeek. Now...
Go on.
In theory, I should hate this.
Right.
Because I hate all of this kind of bringing your childhood back to life. But there's something about this that works.
I mean, I'd argue that the reason this works is because it's supposed to be making fun of that concept of remaking childhood stuff as dark and gritty.
Yeah.
Like, this is... It's played straight, but it's supposed to be tongue-in-cheek. It's supposed to be like...
It's so over the top.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Dark that it works in a weird way.
Right.
And... James Vanderbeek is actually pretty good in it. Like,
right.
I like his performance in this short film.
He's not a terrible actor. Have you ever seen The Rules of Attraction based on the Bret Easton Ellis novel?
No.
Yeah.
He's in that, and he's actually really good in that because he's playing like a sociopath, and he's actually very good in that.
But he's like, he sells this. Him and what's her name?
Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah,
I like Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, the woman.
I haven't seen this, and I'm just you know, playing a little game where I act like I'm annoyed with you for picking this. I haven't even seen it. Right. I have no opinion on it whatsoever.
Between the two of that, they're the only things that work about this. The other performances are pretty awful.
I didn't finish it. It was too long for me.
How long is this?
It's like 14 minutes.
Yeah. Right. Anytime a quote-unquote fan film is more than 2 minutes, I'm like, well, I'm not watching this.
I'd rather scrape mold off a piece of bread and eat it.
But here's the thing that I like about it. It's 14 minutes long. It's the length that all of these like reboot things should be.
Yeah.
If you're gonna do it quick, because right. he wraps up the whole story of the Power Rangers in 14 minutes and that's it. And the ending's pretty atrocious. The special effects of the ending are pretty atrocious, is what I mean. Because I was never like a Power Rangers fan that's either. Too so old so by maybe the time that
me too.
Maybe that has something to do with it. I just liked seeing these the geopolitical stuff.
When Power Rangers came out, I was old enough at the point where I could see the fucking zipper on the back of the monsters.
Right.
And I could see their nose, their giant monster nose wiggling as they moved. It was horrendous looking.
What's interesting about this is I forget the guy's name, but the guy who owns the Power Rangers.
Sabin or whatever his name is.
Yeah, it's Sabin.
Frank Zappa.
He's dead.
he originally had...
Bernie killed him. Were you aware?
This again? He had the video taken down because there actually is a big budget Power Rangers movie in development.
Good for us.
And he had it taken down because, it sort of... "quote unquote" harms the brand because this is violent and the internet cried foul so much that this guy gave in and he said fine, put it back online. So it was down for a few days, but now it's back.
And I would argue that the only thing this is doing is building hype for the reboot.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy's a fool for thinking this is bad for him because.
All right.
So that's it. That's your pick.
Power/Rangers 2015.
It's literally called Power/Rangers.
Yeah, like Face/Off.
Oh, I gotcha. So it's called Power Rangers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we're clear on that.
I don't want to get sued.
Ah,
so.
I gotcha. Let's get out of here. I've had enough. I'm sickened.
Jeff is putting on his brass knuckles as we speak.
I just tore two phone books in half.
Right. So yeah, that's our show. Like we said, next week we're talking about Catherine Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty. So if you haven't seen that film yet, watch it to know what the hell we're talking about.
Yes.
And as always, we encourage you to tweet at us, Facebook, comment us, email us. Just give us some feedback. We love feedback.
Yeah, you can reach out to us at Cutprint Film on Twitter.
Right.
Look us up on Facebook, like our page, comment on our articles. You can email us at info@cutprintfilm.com.
Right.
Request a director for the director series. Hey, request a movie to talk about.
Yeah, go nuts. We're trying to get you, the listening audience, involved.
Yes.
You're the fourth member
romantically
of this
involved
yeah.
with us.
Yeah.
Really. We all want to go on a date and we want a triple
fifth
kiss.
Member. Robert Luge is playing.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, Robert. Go to iTunes, give our podcast a stellar review.
Yes.
6 out of 10.
Yeah.
No, 5 out of 5 is how it works, Dave. We depend on these good reviews. It gets our podcast listed and ranked higher up in the new and noteworthy,
right.
Which in turn gets more people listening. Yeah,
and the higher we're ranked, the better we feel about
That's
ourselves.
Right. The higher we're ranked, the higher I'll wear my pants. And you really want to see that.
Yeah.
The higher the joke quality will be.
That's
so,
right.
So right now we're pretty low.
Yeah, we have no stars, apparently. Also, you should listen to... What else should we listen to, folks?
The Joystick
Jerks.
Yes. Joystickjerks.com.
.gov. .org.
No, just .com. It's a commercial website. You can find their podcast on iTunes. They're very, very funny.
Right.
You can also listen to Anti Fanboy.
Right.
They are a pop culture podcast. They can be found at antifanboy.com and iTunes, Stitcher, all those good places.
Right. We're also on a network called More Like Radio.
So that's all we got today. We're going to be wrapping this up. We'll have some reviews this week. Chappie.
Yeah. Oh, God. Chappie.
Anything else
we hardly
besides
knew
Chappie?
Yeah, we got Chappie. We got Unfinished
Chappo.
Business. Yeah, Unfinished Business starring, what's his name, Vince Vaughn and his slowly bloating body. Yeah,
Dave Franco's in it and Tom Wilkinson is in it, but he doesn't get any lines in the trailer because I guess no one knows who he is. Except
hey, us. I read in GQ that this is the Vaughnissance, so you might be in for a surprise.
Let's not make that a thing.
Yes, let's not. We'll also have a review with Joe Lynch, the director of Everly, which is a fun little video-on-demand action movie.
Yeah, so, you know, head on over to cutprintfilm.com. That's where all the cool kids are, smoking cigarettes and having sex with each other.
Whoa. Unprotected sex.